What's up and welcome in. It's Monday, January 12th, 2026. You are listening live to Grant and Danny on the Fan. We will take you all the way up to 6:30 today. Darius, Ryan, Toby on the production in the saddle. You can watch the show, 106.7 The Fan YouTube stream in high definition. We've got those brand new beautiful cameras working today as well, so we look better than ever. And, of course, you can listen to the show all over the DMV on 106.7 The Fan. You can also listen to the show wherever you go. Pause, rewind, listen by chapter, whatever you want to do on the Odyssey app. We will be talking a lot of football today. Our buddy Jay Gruden joins us in 1 hour at 3 o'clock to discuss David Blau being named the offensive coordinator of the Commanders and an amazing weekend of playoff football. By the way, Danny,
yep.
So Friday we were out at Pupatella Pizza. They spoiled us rotten. We get off the air right at like 6:27 or something.
Mm-hmm.
At like 6:33.
I was going to say 6:27 and 18 seconds.
They announced that David Blau is the new OC of the Commanders. Nothing like a Friday night news dump right after your boys get off the air.
And that's a couple of people were had great senses of humor about it. At Funny Danny, at Grant H. Paulson. They were like, they literally waited till you guys were done.
It
literally felt like, can we go now? No, they're still on. They're still flapping their gums. They're thanking everybody. Wait. Okay, go now.
Tip of the cap to Toby Altizer, who was live and local
yes,
on overtime.
Yes, he was. Tobes.
And had the breaking news to discuss, and I got to enjoy listening to his analysis on the way home. But we've got a lot of thoughts on the David Blau hire. We will get you as the day goes on, specifically coming up here at 2:25. But I actually want to start with all of the playoff activity of the weekend. What an amazing 2 days of football.
Can I just ask, do you like one-score games in the postseason? Do you like games that come down to the final possession or minute? Are you into that? How about 4 out of 5 games this weekend? Can I offer you those? That was pretty good theater. Because remember, usually in the first round, especially with an extra team, you get that, hi, we're the Houston Texans of the mid-2000s. We're going to TJ Yates this thing. And someone gets the doors blown off and it's not competitive. You didn't really have that this weekend.
This was the first time in NFL playoff history where there were 4 games decided by 4 points or fewer in a single postseason round, and they were games 1 through 4 on the slate. 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. Ladies and gentlemen, can we hear it for the National Football League?
The NFL. Yeah. The NFL's here.
Better, this product. An absolute amazing product. They have done it again. Saturday, 7 hours. Sunday, even more. Basically 10, 11 hours of just sitting on the couch, watching Pigskin, and it wasn't until the fourth quarter. We had 19 straight quarters where it was one-possession football, where nobody led by more than a possession
wow.
at any point. That is insanity. So, so good. But let's go through the action here, Danny, one by one. Starting with the Rams beating the Panthers 34-31, 4 lead changes in the fourth quarter. Matt Stafford throws for 304 yards and 3 touchdowns. Puka Nacua goes nuclear. 18 targets, 10 catches for 111. He scored 2 touchdowns. In this game, Matt Stafford, 4th straight road playoff game with 300 or more passing yards, breaking a tie for consecutive such games in playoff history with Brady and Breeze. He was incredible. Stafford, on the game-winning drive, took the field, told his team he was ready to go snatch Carolina's hearts.
Pretty calm, pretty steady. Just felt like I was seeing the coverages really well. Guys up front did a hell of a job keeping me clean on that last drive too, giving me time to click through some progressions. And, I feel like I said, I've been in that spot a lot in my life. And so bring a smile to my face because I like being there and would love to be up, 14 and taking a knee on it with, 4 minutes left. But, wins a win.
How about this stat? NFC West, 3 teams are into the Final Four now with the Bears and the NFC.
Yep.
The 49ers, the Rams, and the Seahawks are 40-7 against everybody else this year. 40-7.
Best division in football, and Arizona was there too. This was the tale of almost 3 games for Stafford. Started out red hot. Hot right now. Matt Stafford. Just everything was open. No answer in coverage. Carolina backing off, getting close up. They had no response. Then Stafford bangs his finger or the side of his hand on a follow through. All of a sudden, maybe wasn't the same. next thing you know, goes through a struggle, and here comes Carolina. Even takes a lead into the fourth quarter
of
that game. Yeah, multiple
leads. Two fourth quarter leads on the Chuba Hubbard run with 14:34 to go. They went up 24-20. And then on the Coker touchdown catch from Bryce Young,
which
they went up
great.
31-27 with 2:39 to go.
And then it's late game Matt Stafford, that throw to Parkinson for the touchdown. You could not stop time, Zach Morris say by the bell style, and put that better. Required a great route, great catch, great timing, great throw, playoff mastery right there. That was incredible.
I will stop short of saying Carolina will be right back here because it's just not how it works.
I have no idea.
There's no bigger lie in football than like, we'll be right here, back here next year because it's not linear. But man, if Carolina wasn't impressive under Dave Canales. It seems like they are going in the right direction. It seems like Bryce Young is making some real growth. Speaking of growth, how about Caleb Williams, fourth quarter for the Chicago Bears? 31-27, they come back to beat the Packers in what had to have been the game of the weekend. Chicago was down 21-3 at the half, and then they were down by 12 in the fourth quarter. Williams breaks a franchise record with 361 yards and two touchdowns, overcoming two interceptions in the game. The tight end for the Bears, this rookie Colston Loveland, a lot of people were down on him early because he's not Tyler Warren. What a game.
That's a bad dude right there.
15 targets, 8 catches, 137 yards. Best rookie tight end performance ever. One of the best tight end playoff performances ever. Just a crazy rivalry over 34 days. These teams played 3 times. And get this. In all 3 matchups, Danny, the Packers and the Bears, Chicago didn't run one single play offensively with a lead, and they won 2 of the games. The Packers ran 106 plays with a lead. The Bears ran 0, and it was Chicago that won 2 of the 3 games.
This, to me, and everything you said is right, this needs to be known as the Green Bay collapse game. This needs to be known as the Matt LaFleur, this is fireable game. This was so reprehensibly bad. Their drive, when they are up 27-24, credit to Chicago, you know, finally comes marching down. They couldn't get a stop despite a 4th-and-8 where Caleb Williams pulls one out of his you-know-what. That was the play of Caleb Williams' life or career to this point, as far as I'm concerned. Rolling left, a throw that only a handful of guys that have ever played this game are going to make.
That was an all-time playoff.
That's why he goes 1-1. You go, holy crap, that's just so amazing. But it required multiple fourth downs actually, the 1 fourth down, because it was 4th-and-3, became a 4th-and-8 after a false start. Green Bay's ineptitude, the following possession, is all-time stuff. A timeout after an incomplete pass into a delay of game. Embarrassing. Beyond embarrassing.
Green
so
Bay's
bad.
Postseason resume over multiple regimes now is littered with games like this. By the way, this year, they're the first team since the 1970 merger to lose 3 games when they led by 10 points in the final 5 minutes of the game. That includes the playoffs. So this was a Packers collapse for sure. This was the Bears doing what they did all year long. I think you have to give them credit because they won like 4 of these games, like this one, in the regular season.
They took advantage. They deserve credit for that.
Caleb Williams to DJ Moore to go ahead and eventually win the game on a play that Washington ran against Chicago that Ben Johnson probably got from Cliff Kingsbury. It was that fake screen Luke McCaffrey go ball that Washington ran a bunch. And they had the Packers twisted into a pretzel because they ran that screen 3 or 4 times in the game to set it up, and it was an easy tutty.
Use the clock. Williams throwing, and it's caught for the touchdown by DJ Moore.
Yeah, it was perfect call. We end up throwing a screen early in the game, and so it sets it up, you know, to the same side, and so it sets it up, and then, being able to had that play call that we worked for, I think, the past 3 or 4 weeks and you know, just didn't use it in those other games. And then, you know, in the right moment at the right time, you know, coach calls it just as he does. And, you know, the guys did a great job selling it. Obviously, DJ made a great catch. Just put the ball out there for him to, you know, go out there, make a catch for us and go win the game.
Bears move on. They host the Rams. Winner will get to the NFC Championship game. Game 3 of 5 kicks off the Sunday trio. And Josh Allen threw Buffalo onto his back. Looked like an MVP, didn't he?
Yep.
28 of 35 for 273 and a touchdown through the air. Throwing to Khalil Shakir and some guy named Slater. Brandon Cooks. I think it's the same Brandon Cooks who's 80.
It's that Brandon Cooks.
And has been on 13 teams. It's got to be that Brandon Cooks.
It's that Brandon
that
Cooks.
Or it's a coincidence. He was his number 2 target in this game. Shakir, by the way, didn't even have 85 yards on 12 targets and 12 catches. Allen runs 11 times, scores 2 touchdowns. Here's my question on Josh Allen. Will he survive these playoffs? I don't mean death, although that's possible too. But I mean like actual staying on the field.
Oh, yeah.
He hurt his finger.
Everything's required of him.
He hurt his knee. At one point, I thought it was kind of dirty, but Hines Allen, who used to have the same name as Josh Allen, but now he changed his name so he doesn't anymore. He just like jumped on his head like my son did to my daughter off of a couch when I had to put him in his room for like 3 hours one time. Did you see that? Josh Allen's just laying on the ground, and Hines Allen's like, oh, I'll just jump on your head. And no one on the broadcast mentioned
it. No, it didn't seem to bother anybody.
Wild. Trevor Lawrence, second quarterback to ever take 2 leads with touchdown passes in the fourth quarter and lose a playoff game. I know he threw, I think it was 2 picks, including at the end of the game, but I thought he was up and down, but he did enough in this game.
Plenty of good in there, too, yeah.
Jags managed 6.6 yards per play, scored 27 points on just 54 snaps. They just didn't have the ball enough.
Yeah, that fourth down they didn't get loomed large. That was kind of the story through a couple of games this weekend where, you know, I know what the analytics say, I know what the numbers say, but you know, maybe game flow dictates something else. It felt like it might have been a different game had they come away with points there on that Lawrence cutback on a nicely designed play where his shin touches after review, they get the call right, turns into Buffalo ball. But this is what the Bills are this year, quite frankly. It's we don't have a lot going for us right now. Defensively, we can't really stop the run. Yeah. We're not great in any area on defense. We don't really have many weapons on offense. Hey, Josh, can you help? And the answer is yes.
If he can play at this level, which is MVP level, elite, best player in the NFL kind of level.
Yeah.
Then of course.
That's what's required. That's what he did.
But think about it. He had to play like that, essentially mistake-free, to beat Jacksonville by 3. And I actually think the Jags are really, really good. They get by Buffalo, it would not have surprised me if they went on a run. I think they're that good.
Yep.
But it took that performance to narrowly win a football
to
game.
To eke.
What happens when a tipped ball becomes a pick?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when your running back, James Cook, or somebody else loses a fumble other than the one gaffe they had on special teams? That's where I worry about their margin for error here. Allen, the first player in NFL history to complete 80% of his passes and to rush for multiple touchdowns in a playoff game.
And goal. He's shoved across. They'll go ahead and take the touchdown as, again, Reggie Gilliam rides right behind him, and the Bills are back in front with a minute to go.
Real quick, too, one of the wildest plays of the weekend, the 10-yard tush push. How about from the 11-yard line?
I mean, I've never seen anything like that.
They need 2 feet. Get rid of the tush push.
They got that.
It was awesome. It was amazing, but also get rid of it. So they, Josh Allen is like 279 pounds or whatever. He's pushing forward. 2 of his linemen just lift him up into a pile.
Yeah, I was saying he was in the air at one point.
Oh, no. I think for 8 yards.
Right. Like, for a lot of it.
For the whole point.
Yeah.
His linemen are just shoving him. The Eagles are trying to get him on the ground. He's in the air like they're doing a He's a Jolly Good Fella bit. And they're just rugby scrumming him toward the end zone. And Jim Nance is like, he's still going. He's still moving. He's in the air. I don't know why he sounds like this. He's still going at the 3, at the 2. Like, poor Al Michaels wouldn't have known where the ball was or who had it or what game was happening. But luckily, Jim Nance was like, he may have scored. And they ended up spotting him at the 1.
Unbelievable.
What the hell was that?
I can't remember. Yeah. I mean, that was utterly bizarre, crazy, insane. And the Bills, by the way, one of the teams that voted correctly to ban the stupid play.
That play, while incredible to watch, is why this play needs to be done away with.
Yeah, stop assisting runners. That's the end.
And that's all it has to be.
That's all it has to be.
There has to be no tush-push rhetoric about it at all. Just, you know what you can't do? Grab your quarterback and carry him down the field.
Yeah, you can't line up incorrectly and false start nearly every time, and you can't aid the runner. Simple.
Here's some good news for Commanders fans. The Philadelphia Eagles are at home.
Man. What a bummer.
San Francisco, 23-19 at Lincoln Financial Field. They go cross-country, in the cold, on the road, 5.5-point dogs, without a bunch of their defensive starters. They're on, I think it's their 5th and 6th linebackers, and at times it looked like it.
George Kittle gone in the first minutes of the game.
George Kittle's pounding Patron in the third quarter in the locker room because he ruptured his Achilles tendon early in the contest, and San Francisco still wins. 3 lead changes in the fourth quarter. Brock Purdy, who had 2 terrible second-half interceptions, overcomes those mistakes, engineers 2 scoring drives late, 262-2, made some huge, huge plays down the stretch. Unlikely hero. It's been that way for San Fran all year. This game was a microcosm of their season. Where'd Demarcus Robinson come from? Had a 61-yard catch on the opening drive, 6 for 111, caught a big touchdown to give them a 7-0 lead. a lot of Christian McCaffrey. You knew that would be the case. How about 21 touches, 114 yards, and two touchdowns for Christian McCaffrey? San Francisco's been resilient all year. Kyle Shanahan talked about that after the game. This is via KNBR.
I think it shows how they've been all year. I mean, they've been resilient all year. They've overcome a lot. They believe in each other a ton. And we knew we couldn't come in here and just win by certain guys making plays. We knew we had to come in here and win as a complete team. And I really believe we played as a complete team today. And that's why we got it done.
How about this coaching job by Kyle?
Seriously.
Has he done a coaching? I know he's been in two Super Bowls. I think he's 9-4 in the playoffs or something. Has he done a job this good? That team had no business being
usually when they're this banged up. It usually happens once every 3 years or so.
And they go like 6-10?
That's the 6-10, 6-11, whatever type season. That's not the case this year. I mean, they are undermanned again. And this is one of the things that I know it's not apples to apples, but it frustrates me so much about this year in Washington where I understand you're not going to be as good.
Yeah.
You can't have been historically bad. And then the response is, well, they've had time to build their team. Sure. The acknowledgement then is this one here in Washington was really poorly built and couldn't withstand anything.
You know who sneaky probably deserves a lot of credit and doesn't get it? Because you just said something I think that's so true I haven't thought about. They've had this year like three times under Shanahan.
Yeah.
And they always bottom out. Mac Jones kept them afloat. Mac Jones played actually really well, like starting caliber
football. Plenty good enough, yeah.
And normally when they go to the backup, it's been Nick Mullins or C.J. Beathard or I don't even remember.
Christian McCaffrey had to play once.
One dude's name years ago who was like from some weird Louisiana or something. I'll have to pull it.
Brian Mitchell?
No. If he would have played for them, maybe it would have gone
better. I'm doing bets, yeah.
But it always bottoms out.
Yep.
And Mac Jones kept them going. As far as the Eagles go in this game, this was about as bad a loss for them as could have happened to end their season. There would have been no way your year ends at home and everyone would have been happy about it. But for Jalen Hurts in an obvious passing situation late to basically be boxed into this, hey, man, everyone says you're pretty limited at this. Let's make some throws, and then he couldn't do it. Goes for 168. You had Barkley going for over 100. You went for 140 on the ground. You still can't get the pass game going. And then you got Nick Sirianni and A.J. Brown being separated face-to-face. A.J. Brown drops two passes on the final drives late in the game. Like, if you're an Eagles hater, this was catnip.
I had my catnip because I'm an Eagles hater, and that was delightful. Imagine all those fans being upset and booing as they leave the arena.
Cursing out and screaming at the 49ers fans as they're getting off the buses. All those videos were out there.
My team stinks again. That's as good as it gets right there. That's perfect. I'd like to drink it and then freeze some of it and then skate on it in the springtime.
Here's two stats for you from this game. The Eagles' second half possessions. You ready? 3-and-out, 7 yards.
Mm-hmm.
4 plays, 6 yards. 10 plays, 23 yards. I don't even know how that happens, but they kicked the field goal. 3-and-out, 7 yards. 8 plays, 32 yards. Again, they couldn't move the ball at all. And this is against a defense that was down a bunch of starters. 10 plays, 44 yards, turnover on downs to end the game.
And the final play for them, to me, is a microcosm of it. And it's what they've been missing, frankly, since I think, you know, a couple of the coordinators have moved on, the way things have changed. Timeout happens, right? It's 3rd and 11. They're going to think about the play. Brady says, hey, get a timeout here, get the play right. So they're going back and forth. What do we do? Saleh shows something, has the defense show a certain look. They think they've got the right play call for it. They're basically called four verts into a zone that's quite literally designed to stop it. They lost the chess match. That, to me, is a microcosm of it. So you saw the view from the All-22 side that they showed on the telecast, and it's been broken down, where you go, there's no one open. This is designed to stop that. They had no answer for it. They got out-coached right there in that spot. So, yeah, I'm with you on Hurts. Deserves some culpability there. Certainly wasn't particularly good in the second half. But right there on the timeout, everybody's got a chance to figure out the best strategy. Theirs was worse than San Francisco's. Advantage, Saleh.
Here's another big problem for the Eagles yesterday. Juwan Jennings had more completed passes over 15 air yards than Jalen Hurts did. Hurts was 0 for 5 from 15-plus downfield. Jennings, on a beautifully designed reverse that turned into a double pass, basically, ends up hitting McCaffrey for a touchdown on a beautiful throw and a better catch. His ability to track that ball was better than receivers track the ball. Like, that was crazy, but they just couldn't do anything down the field. Finally, last night, Sunday Night Football, the Patriots, the team that everyone kind of said was the biggest fraud, had the most convincing win. Now, it wasn't pretty. I mean, they were up 6-3 in the late going of that game, so I'm not going to sit here and act like they blew out the Chargers. But New England is now 1-0 against winning teams in the playoffs.
There you go.
The Patriots sacked Justin Herbert 6 times. They hit him 12 times. The blitz gets home all night long. Drake May, supporting character role, I thought. Like, he wasn't spectacular, but he was okay. had a huge touchdown throw, had a big run to set up a field goal.
Yeah, with his legs, I thought, ended up being the difference.
66 yards rushing, 37 to set up the field goal at the end of the half. Ends up throwing for 270 and a tutty. That's a really, really good defense. But I thought the bigger story was the Patriots defense, which has not been that good all year, but has been playing better and better. And boy, did they shove it on Justin Herbert. Nightmare in the playoffs continues. 1-for-10 on third down for the Chargers. 3 total points. And all year long, we've talked about how well-coached the Patriots are, and they looked like it last night. Game on ice, Drake May with a dime to Hunter Henry to give New England a 13-point lead on NBC.
Play pass. Oh, picked up on Henley. Twists him. May on top. Henry's got it to the end zone. Touchdown, New England.
Mike Tirico on the call. How about this stat? The Patriots defense last night, Danny, zero touchdowns allowed, 6 sacks, under 100 rushing yards, under 150 net passing yards. That's only happened one other time in playoff history. 1985 Chicago Bears.
Wow.
That's how good of a defensive performance last night was.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the story, Patriots deserve credit. I think they're as good a coach team as you're going to find. I usually would have said the same about a Jim Harbaugh-led group with his Chargers team. Their offense had no answers. I don't know what I don't know in terms of, I'd love someone really smart to break down all the different route combos and the like, but how many times is Herbert back at the top of his drop and they were able to show something that's full field and it looks like a Chargers job was to go stand next to a Patriot. And they would stand there and strafe and turn around towards the line of scrimmage and just sort of look around like they were, the old vibrating football boards back in the day where there was no graphics and no ability to have anybody move. And they're plastered, and it's pathetic, and Herbert's running for his life, getting hit play after play after play. Talking about surviving the postseason. Had the Chargers won somehow, Herbert wouldn't have made it through another round that way. I mean, he was getting blasted in this game. Had to run for his life, slid awkward. I can't believe he didn't tear a quad or a groin or both on that one awkward slide. Nobody's open at any point. This is what we do. There'll be a Herbert referendum as if he failed and it wasn't, his playoff lack of success, blah, blah, blah. Nobody did him any favors. That offensive line was terrible. Understandably, your star bookend tackles. But that group was overmatched. Nothing you could do there.
Yeah, it's the worst line in the league. 2 playoff games during the Harbaugh, Herbert, Roman era now. They have 1 touchdown on 22 drives.
That'd be the end of the Roman era for me.
They've been outscored about 50-15 during that time. So there you go. A quick look back at the weekend that was an amazing weekend of playoff football. Next, I want to get to the Commanders and the David Blau hire. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. We talked quite a bit Friday, live out and about. We were on our field trip show from Pupitella out in Chantilly. And we talked quite a bit about the possibility that David Blau was still going to be the OC, even though Mike McDaniel was out there, because it just seemed like the team has very, very high hopes for him and was afraid that he was going to be leaving their building. And minutes after we went off the air and talked about why it could happen, it came to fruition and Blau became their OC. But we have not had a chance to react since, oddly enough, Danny. So McDaniel, still out there. And one of the things you said was you could be okay with the Blau hiring if they kind of exhausted everything else and it was a situation where they weren't choosing him over McDaniel and choosing him over the field. And they basically, waited. They did the opposite of that.
Yeah, if McDaniel's a head coach, I'm not going to complain.
Right, they jumped first.
But if he's an OC, it basically put your feet to the fire, right?
So how do you feel overall?
I don't feel bad. I know a lot of fans are really down on it because it looks, I don't know what the right word is for them. Everybody's got a different sentiment, but it looks like, well, we don't want anyone to say no to us. It looks like we were afraid. It looks like it's kind of, I mean, they don't see the level of risk that it takes to elevate someone that has literally never made an offense up before to this really, really high level position. He's skipping about 3 steps where you're a quarterback's coach, then you're maybe a pass game coordinator or, assistant. You're jumping from, I played in the league 3 years ago to in charge of an offense and it got to have a kind of year. So there's a major risk there. There's a risk for any hire. obviously, especially in the position that Dan Quinn and company's in.
Risk is the biggest word, I think, I would say, synonymous with this hire. Like, if you said, give me three words, I would say risky.
Risk. Riskiness.
Ballsy.
Yeah.
And then I would say upside. Because I also think this is a massive upside play. I am, for better or worse, and I'll be wrong plenty, oftentimes going to side with the ascending young offensive play caller. We've talked a lot about head coaching hires in that way. I feel the same way with coordinators. Mm-hmm. I like the upside of a potential star in your building over a retread who's been all over the place coming back here, who's a known commodity. Like, the things that make you nervous about Blouse and experience, you don't have to worry about if you hire, I'm just naming it an old dinosaur, but like Daryl Bevel, mm-hmm, or one of these guys who's done this at three or four stops. You could absolutely be more comfortable knowing they have an offense. They don't have to build one from scratch. They've called plays. They're not going to be overwhelmed. You didn't hire Blau because you feel good about those things. You hired him because, I think, for a few reasons. Number one, you feel like it's a multiple-year solution. You feel like he's not leaving after this year because he's not going to be ready for a head coaching job, whereas McDaniel or some other guys could have been one and done if it went well. I think his relationship with Jaden Daniels is pertinent.
I think it's pivotal to it, yeah.
Do not sleep on how frustrated Daniels has been, seems like, since they dismissed Cliff Kingsbury, and the fact that you kept one of his guys in the building who he's got a relationship and a rapport with around. I think the fact that he can help ease the transition out of Kingsbury's very unique one-off, not like anything else offense, to something else is also significant. And the fact that Blau is a Ben Johnson disciple, a Kevin O'Connell disciple, is going to run a variation of the offenses that are working in this conference, in this league, I think was also really, really appealing.
So we're all products of our environment and our experiences, right? There's a reason a lot of us who don't have our fingers in our ears or are just screaming anytime adults have a conversation, where we've got a little PTSD from Robert Griffin, right? Where our athletic wunderkind quarterback gets injured some and then everything changes. A lot of people are a little bit nervous about things because, again, we live through our history. We should also have that same pathology when it comes to a year too early rather than a year too late. How many guys that were the darlings of the league were here in polo shirts in that coaching team photo? Basically, the league and executives in the league, the John Schneiders of the world, the Kyle Shanahans, the Sean McVays, even though Matt LaFleur's not, his name isn't golden right now, still, that's a bunch of 13-win seasons on his resume. And Mike McDaniel and everybody in between were here, were in this building, and they were allowed to walk because they weren't ready yet. They weren't ready yet. Well, they got ready in a hurry and turned in some great work.
I'll do you one better. Dan Quinn in Atlanta, years after those guys left here, when they were further along in their careers, had the possibility of hiring LaFleur when it was time for him to be an OC. Chose not to. McDaniel, time to be an OC. Chose not to. Let them all walk. Has said over and over and over again that was his biggest mistake. That just allowing all those guys to leave with Kyle Shanahan, rather than promoting one of them internally to keep them around with Matt Ryan, is why his time in Atlanta spun off the rails, because he went with Sarkisian and he regretted it. He didn't want to make the same mistake again. So I know why, to your point, as fans, we've got that. You're calling it PTSD, which I mm-hmm. like. Dan Quinn's got that too. Make no mistake about it, though. This is such a massive risk.
Yeah.
It's so hard to build your own offense in real time over one offseason. It's really hard to learn how to call plays. And normally, I was talking to a player in the league about this over the weekend, and they were saying, you know, when I've had a really inexperienced guy, it's normally taken a year. It takes them time. There are major growing pains. Nobody really hits the ground sprinting. I remember back to even Sean McVay in 2014. Cousins gets benched. They go through this quarterback carousel. The offense wasn't really operating. Even the savants, the gurus, the geniuses, the ones everyone ends up loving.
You got to go through it.
Does he have the time to do that? Because this person said to me, they just need to be patient. You know, it's going to take a couple years. I don't think that's what this is.
Yeah, how do you do that now?
So, to me, you better sprint in September. You better win this year.
There's risk every move, kind of as we talked about, because you're in this unique spot with 1 year incredible success, 1 year unmitigated disaster. Now there's a new hire because of the disaster part. If the hot up-and-coming offensive mind or guy that's been a head coach recently, Mike McDaniel, comes in as the OC and that you do well, he's gone. There's that risk. So now it's third system, 3 years, Jaden Daniels, huge risk. There's risk here where we're going, hey, we need to be patient. We don't have time to be patient. Year one, we could have been patient, but you know, would you have said, hey, good call, let's have a neophyte that was in the league 2 years ago calling plays for your prize franchise quarterback? There is so much risk associated with this because of the backdrop, because of the context. We would not feel the same way if year two was pretty good, the year that I thought they were going to have, 8 or 9 wins, maybe miss the postseason just because, you know, normal regression happens. You miss a game or two with a hamstring or you get nicked up. And Cliff Kingsbury gets a head coaching job. We were going to face this anyhow, which is the point that you've made all along, and I know you've been vilified for it on fan Twitter, but a defensive head coach a lot of times leaves you in that spot where you kind of have to constantly fulfill this role. So there's risk no matter what you do. But to me, the big selling point for this fan base, yeah, we can talk about it's going to ease Jaden's transition. They already work together. They already presumably have a really good relationship, and that's a good thing. And this is a really big challenge to learn a new offense in year 3 and et cetera with all the backdrop of what happened this year. But for fans in this area, the selling point should be this organization, however you want to get your word out, you want to stand up there and tell us this is a year early instead of a year late. We are doing this a year early. So the next McVay, the next superstar with a flat top that came through here that's running through the league, we're keeping him here. That's what we're doing.
The problem with that, if there's such a problem, is that when you do that, you need a runway. Like I mentioned to someone, somebody was tweeting about it in that sense, and I said, this is the kind of hire you make if you feel like you have 2 and 3 years ahead to figure this all out, which is not the case, in my opinion. It's a gotta-have-it, make-it-break-it, third-year for Dan Quinn, September you better get off to a fast start kind of situation. I really believe that. Mm. And if that is the case, it just makes this decision that much more curious. But I totally get how they got here. If on a binary I've got to say I'm for it or against it, I'm for it. Because I'm always going to give the benefit of the doubt to the exciting hire of an up-and-coming, ascending, the phrase I use this with Toboney and Butera and some of these guys that are beloved in their sports, that get jobs much younger than they're supposed to, like these rising stars, these rock star type people. Blau is one of those guys. Is it too soon? Very possibly. I promise you 5 to 7 years from now, he'll either be a head coach or an OC who's having a lot of success. Does not mean he's going to have that success right away here. And if he does struggle a bit, does that lead to the offense struggling, to Dan Quinn not having a good enough record and everybody getting fired? Maybe. That's why this is a really, really gutsy decision. The McDaniel thing, my point was just, he's going to get head coaching interviews. He's getting a bunch of OC interviews.
Yep.
It's going to take a long time. They also didn't want to wait. You could disagree with that if you want to.
But that makes sense to me.
They had no interest in being left holding the bag. If you wait, Blau goes to Detroit, let's say, or somewhere else. That's the guy you want. If you can't get McDaniel, now what? And you risk the Bieniemy situation of landing with a guy that ends up backfiring on you when you hire the guy last. So if you, I'm sure, now I will say, I don't know how hard in the paint I can go, but having talked to people close with McDaniel, the team never formally reached out to Mike McDaniel about an interview the way that you would normally do that in the league with an agent and all that stuff. Do I assume, because of their relationship, that DQ and McDaniel talked? They better have. Like, it would be malpractice.
It's malpractice.
And insanity if there was no touching base to say, hey, do you want to come here? And he's like, dude, I love Jaden. Let's go. If they didn't reach out to him at all, that would be egregious.
Yeah, my hope is, hey, man, I'm getting head coaching interviews. Exactly. That's probably where my path is.
A fire off a call, fire off a text, driving home from the facility.
Yep.
But what I was told was, in terms of, like, the filing for an interview, the touching base, the agent part of it, like, that did not happen. So I really hope they did the due diligence. The only interviews were, like, Drew Terrell, who was here as a receivers coach, couple of guys.
Lunda, something from Dallas, the tight ends coach.
Wells, I think, yeah. The tight ends coach from Dallas. Those were not, in my opinion, candidates that were going to get the job. So it does not look like that thorough of a search, in my opinion. That would be one knock I have. It's not like they, you know, the DC search, they're bringing in Patrick Graham and all these dudes who have been DCs for years. They didn't really do that on OC. And they moved very, very quickly to land at the spot, which was right down the hall. I don't dislike it, but it's risky. Grant and Danny on the fan. Speaking of coaches, Matt LaFleur sounds like he could be getting an extension in Green Bay. People think he should be fired. Where do we come down on that? And are any other coaches from these playoffs in trouble at all in terms of job security? You're listening to G&D. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Jay Gruden joins the show in about 12 minutes at 3 o'clock. We'll go around the NFL with him. But first, we got to talk to him about the hiring of David Blough.
The thing I want to ask him about is before he was an OC, how did you go about going, okay, here's what my offense is. Here are the packages, the player personnel, the groupings, the plays, what I want something to be called, what I want to major in, my identity. That process, I think we kind of underrated. It's not like, I mean, I'm sure you've been doodling on napkins and keeping a spreadsheet together, but building something from scratch, which is what it is pretty damn complex and impressive, and it's a huge undertaking for anybody, let alone a guy, again, that was playing in Arizona in 2022.
Yeah, I just want to get his perspective, because he can relate in a way that none of us can, on how difficult this is going to be for David Blough. You know, how difficult this job is overall. Because I think a lot of us assume, oh, he's smart. It's just calling plays. He'll figure it out. It's like, I think there's probably a lot more to it than that, if I had to guess. But we'll see what Jay has to say coming up when he joins us at the top of the hour. What have you made of the huge storyline since the Packers collapse and lost to the Bears about Matt LaFleur and whether or not he should be dismissed? 36 games over 500 in the regular season, 76-40. He's got 4 11 or more win seasons on his ledger. Now, the flip side of this is that a Packers fan who wants him out would say they've only made the playoffs the last three times as a 7 seed. So if not for the expansion of the playoff bracket, they wouldn't have gotten in at all. Although, I think if you take that away, maybe they find a way to win one more game. It's hard to say. But they also just lose games like this too often. He's the oldest of the head coaches, believe it or not, in the NFC playoff field this year at 46 years old. He just turned 46. My take has been his brother Mike is getting head coaching interviews, who's the coordinator to the coordinator in San Francisco, basically, because he knows Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. He's in L.A. now, actually, but he's been in San Francisco. Like, he's in the room with those guys. He knows the offense that everybody wants to run, that Matt LaFleur runs at a really high level, and so he's getting these interviews and maybe a job. And if I'm living in a world where Mike LaFleur might become a head coach, I shouldn't be firing Matt LaFleur, his older brother, who does the thing that everybody's hoping Mike LaFleur might be able to do, but at a really, really high level. I'm not telling you it's crazy that Packers fans would want him out. I'm not even saying it's unreasonable after that loss and some of these playoff losses to consider making a change. You also know that I think Jim Harbaugh is a little bit overrated, who everyone would be firing these guys for. I wouldn't be blowing out Matt LaFleur to go get another guy that loses games that are inexplicable in the fourth quarter all the time. So I don't really see a better upgrade necessarily to LaFleur. I understand the frustration, but I'm not moving on from him.
This is why I'd be a terrible owner. I would be. I could not watch that collapse, that embarrassment down the stretch in a game that you have won multiple times over. Like, that ineptitude, that shoot yourself in the foot and then reload and shoot in the other foot, which is what they did to me, I'd be so irate, I'd go, I can't watch that again. I cannot go through any of these exercises and pretend that this is normal or within the bounds of acceptable. This isn't one of those like, hey, the other team made some plays, man, tough break. And they did. Chicago made some plays. This is you had an easily binary, controllable process where you made every possible wrong decision and then your group melted down and you did nothing to stop it. You're sliding down the mountain, just grab on any of the handholds and do normal process things. And they didn't. And they failed so badly, I would have fired him this morning.
If McManus makes kicks, you win the game. That's another thing I really
struggle
with.
Totally part of it, yeah.
Too, right? Is mm-hmm. that, you know, when Kevin King didn't track a ball in the NFC title game when they picked off Brady three times, you know, you lose it or you get to the Super Bowl. Like, you can always put the result on a coach. We do it when they win, we give them the credit. So,
yep.
I understand you get some of the loss. And I do think there were bad coaching decisions made in terms of run pass and some of the things they did to slow down momentum, or in this case, not slow down momentum in the fourth quarter. But it was still more bad execution to me than bad coaching. And I just go back to, even if it was a fireable loss, maybe it is, even if it's a fireable performance in the playoffs over many years, everyone's hunting for an offensive mind to run the thing he runs at a high level. Look what he did for Rodgers, who he turned back into an MVP. Look what he's done for Jordan Love.
Totally.
You've got the thing everybody's hunting for.
A lot of deposits.
The grass is probably not greener. You'd be making a change just to make a change. We all acknowledge that. That's fine. I want to ask Jay Gruden about this. We'll do that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.